So I'm super excited to have Vaso Parisino with us today. She is a, I would say, a rising star, or maybe even already a star in the UK tech ecosystem when it comes to people. She's worked at some amazing companies. She's very dedicated also to this field. She's worked in it for many, many years. And yeah, so I'm very excited to have you with us today. Hi, Vaso.
Hi, thanks. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for your kind words. And yeah, great to be here.
Awesome. So why don't we dive right into it? So some people in the audience may already know you and others won't. So I think for those, it would be great if you could give a brief overview of your background and particularly also how you ended up in, you know, as a CPO at Ravio.
Yeah, sure. Happy to. So I'm currently the Chief People Officer here at Ravio. Ravio is an HR tech platform that provides benchmarking and live insights, salary bandings, and everything you could possibly need around compensation. VP People at TrueLayer and various stints at other high growth companies before then, most notably at Deliveroo, where I was the very lucky first person to join in the people team and sort of stayed there for a period of absolutely crazy and massive growth. So that's my background.
A chief people officer, which is quite a kind of senior, you know, position. And how was kind of that journey for you from being the first person at a, let's say, smaller-ish company early in your career to now really being like a C-level, let's call it executive in a, you know, well-funded startup?
Yeah. Well, I think I had a very lucky and serendipitous sort of introduction to the people space. So my very first job actually was in executive search. So I sort of learned how to recruit for these like very, very high level, very senior jobs. So that was sort of the first intro that I had into the people space. How I fell into an in-house people role was through that first role at Deliveroo, where basically the great folks over there hired me because I had the recruitment experience. And I had also had an interesting blend of experience in commercial and operations role at a company called One Fine Stay. And so they took a bit of a punt on me, offering me what was then the talent manager role to join. This was around March 2015. At the time, there were, you know, 30 people at Deliveroo. We were trading in, I think, two or maybe three zones in London. Fast forward to the end of that year, we were already a headcount of, I don't know, 600-700, and trading in sort of, 11 markets globally, and doing, you know, lots and lots and lots of orders. So, extrapolating that over the 4 years that I stayed there, and obviously enormous amounts of funding and seeing that kind of crazy, crazy growth internally, which also translated to a lot of people growth, just meant that I had a baptism of fire, right? So I made a ton of mistakes during my journey there. But of course, that meant that when I was ready to leave Deliveroo, it meant that I had a whole list of things that, you know, if only I could do it again, I would not have made this and this and this and this mistake. And so I still have that list. It's in a notebook. But it's really been sort of a Bible that I take with me wherever I go and sort of keep iterating on that playbook of how to grow a company really quickly and hopefully learn from the mistakes that I made.
Awesome. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about your, let's say, your playbook or the things, maybe the advice that you would have liked that somebody have given you at a later point in the podcast. But maybe to, because we also have people on the podcast that aren't necessarily in the people space or maybe are thinking about it. And sometimes, you know, there are conceptions about roles that maybe are not true. And that's often the case also for me as a founder, for example. How's that been for you? Are there any like common myths or like, you know, fallacies that exist around the you know, the role of a chief people officer or head of people that are actually, you know, that are just myths?
Yeah, great question. I mean, a lot of folks think that people or people that work in HR are like really boring and that the work isn't impactful and, you know, it's very admin heavy and that, you know, we love rules. And, you know, to some extent, and I think in, you know, in very traditional companies, there's probably some, you know, some truth in that. But luckily, or, you know, at least in our world, the world of tech, you know, people teams typically look at the problems that we're trying to solve in a really innovative way and take with them principles that we've learned from, you know, our friends in product, our friends in marketing, our friends in engineering. And that helps us solve really difficult, gnarly problems that have to do with people. People are unpredictable, you know. So it helps us solve the people problems in really interesting ways. And so, you know, I really disagree with the myth that, you know, HR is really boring and it's very admin heavy and, you know, you got to like the rules. Like, you know, that hasn't been my experience at all. And I'm really, really proud of the teams that I've been a part of, but also built and the cool ways we sort of think about problems. Mm-hmm.
And what would you say are the biggest challenges that you're facing at the moment? And how are you thinking about tackling those?
Great question. So I think a few things. So I think, you know, the tension between wanting to have a flexible operating model in terms of, you know, how often do we come into the office? Do we have an office? Are we fully remote, part remote, hybrid, you know? All of that, that tension is really, I'm struggling to balance it and to figure out the best way for, you know, for Ravio and what we want to model as a company. And then of course, and this is front of mind for me, you know, typically anything to do with compensation has always been very, very difficult for me, not least because, you know, typically you have access to outdated data that's really patchy and doesn't make any sense. And it's also really expensive. So, of course, this is one of the reasons why I joined Ravio, because I want to solve that problem. And yeah, it's something that I'm definitely, you know, working on full time and thinking about all day.
Yeah. Actually, we hear that a lot as well, because we're an HR system, right? So mm-hmm. A lot of the questions that we get around, like, we have these permission groups, right? So you can create like different groups and you have visibility. And the first question is always, can I limit the visibility of compensation to a certain department or level or something? So that's always the first question around visibility of data. So I'm not surprised that that's one of the big friction points that also you've been experiencing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in terms of visibility, like, I think, you know, that's something we can reasonably solve. But, you know, having principled thinking around compensation and benefits and thinking very holistically about, you know, what's the problem we're solving for? Are we incentivizing performance? Are we incentivizing, you know, what culture we want? What does a great benefits package mean for our folks? Because it means something completely different to me versus, you know, my colleague Florence, who lives in Manchester and is a remote worker, for example. So these are all very interesting problems that we're spending a lot of time thinking about.
And what would you say, and I think you already touched on that in just now, but fundamentally, what would you say as change in your industry since you started working on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of within the tech sphere, there's a lot more kudos associated with working in a people department, and you know, a lot of people will regularly sort of open their communication with a people team and sort of say, oh my god, what you do is really hard. And you know, it's nice to It's nice to have that recognition sometimes. I'd also say something that I found really, really interesting and something that really excites me is seeing how many folks from different teams and different sectors are really excited at the idea of joining the people team. So, you know, we've been able to bring into the people team people who were, you know, engineering managers or product managers, or one of the product designers joined our team. And I think that's, I think, a testament to the really difficult and interesting work that people teams do. You know, that we're able to attract people from other parts of the organization. And it also means that we're able to benefit from that diversity of thought and diversity of experience that we see across an organization within the people team. So I think that's really cool. And I'm excited for, you know, to see the output of these internal movements.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think really like the people function is really turning almost like into a product rather than a, let's say, like an administrative cost center, as you mentioned before, right? Where really you're driving business outcomes for the whole company. And yeah, you now have even engineers working on maybe products that are internally serving the people function to help you do that.
Definitely internal tooling and all of that. I also look, you know, I regularly say that some of the people that I've learned the most about people stuff from are folks like engineering managers or, you know, a VP engineering. Like we could all, you know, this is a function that touches all of the business, right? So why not take that, the brain power that we have in different teams and bring them all centrally to work together. I found it to be quite a successful formula.
And would you say there are any lessons that your job has taught you that you think everybody should learn at some point in their life?
I think a few things. I would say that working in a people team, especially in hyper-growth environments, and then, of course, during COVID and then the aftermath of that sort of, you know, tech decline and the onslaught that we saw of redundancies across the board, et cetera, has really meant that in terms of resilience, I think the people leaders and people teams are, you know, have shown that they have the grit and the resilience necessary to be very successful executives and very successful professionals. I would say the second thing that really, you know, that I think I've learned along the way is to, you know, don't, this typically when there's a difficult people problem, you know, optimizing for the right thing and being generous, and you know in your gut if it's the right thing, you know, usually works out in the favor of the business. Typically my advice to people is, you know, if you'd be very happy sort of telling your mom, your grandmother, whoever it is for you, whoever that special person is, if you're happy telling them, hey mom, you know, this is the problem that I had at work and it was, you know, it was complex and difficult and here's how I solved it. If you're able to share that information and not feel ashamed, then that's usually a good indicator of whether you've done the right thing. And that isn't always the right thing by, you know, by the policy or by like the rules or, you know, what legal said, but typically it works out to be the best solution. So that's definitely something that I stand by and that I've, you know, that I've learned over the years.
And there's one thing that I'd love to hear from you, and I know a lot of people are struggling with, and maybe you have the magic formula for this, given that you've worked in this for so long now. What do you think? What's the best way to deliver negative feedback? Is there one solution kind of for everything? Is it a very nuanced? What's kind of the experience you had in that?
Yeah. Good question. Look, I think the answer is deliver it right away and deliver it super candidly. Spit it out. It's fine. You know, there are so many frameworks that, you know, you can find in terms of how to structure that feedback. But it doesn't matter if you don't deliver it on time and if you don't deliver it candidly, you've already lost the game. And just to be clear, like, if you do not deliver the feedback that you want to give, then you are responsible for whatever happens after that point. Nobody can fix anything if they haven't been told what to fix and how and what the impact is. So if you're not giving the feedback, that's on you.
Absolutely, yeah. And let's talk a little bit about Ravio. What would you say makes you or maybe your coworkers or generally people in the company proud of working for the company?
Yeah, okay. Look, I think the problem that we're trying to solve is a really important one. So paying people fairly is, central to my values as a human, let alone like a people professional. I've never been able to understand, in previous roles where I worked, in non-people roles, I've never been able to understand like how folks are paid. It has been shrouded in such mystery, and so is able to make people feel very, unfairly treated because they have been for a really, really long time. So on the other side, as a customer and as a people team, the amount of spreadsheets that we've had to sort of combine together into like a master Frankenstein spreadsheet, it's just so painful. It's comp review period is always the most difficult period of my year, and I always go on holiday after that. And so for me, Ravio sort of combines, well, solves all my problems in one, both as a consumer or an end user, i.e. an employee, but also as a people person. Having a bit of software that solves these problems for me and also provides me with the data that I need to go to my executive team, founders, whoever that is, and say, hey, you have a thesis that we're paying really well, really poorly, whatever it is. Here's the data. Here's the evidence that supports what I've been telling you, and you can't argue with data, right? So, I'm really excited to be very early on in the journey of solving all of these problems, but I think we're onto something really special and something that's going to be, that's going to solve a really big problem.
Yeah. And certainly, I mean, we've been hearing a lot of about you guys also from our customers, and I know that people have, very excited to be able to now be more transparent, also be more fair with their compensation, which without the right data, right, it's just impossible to even know what is even fair. So, it's great that companies like Ravio are now actually bringing this to startups like ourselves also to be able to make better decisions on how to compensate people fairly.
Yeah, completely agree. And, to anyone who's listening, if I can be helpful, we have this great feature where we're able to share benchmarks on a one-off basis. More than happy to share a benchmark for a VP marketing role. It's a really cool feature. It's completely free. More than happy to help. Like, I'm really motivated to help the ecosystem be better, and that's also a massive reason why I joined Ravio in the first place.
How do you think about culture? So I know that a lot of companies, when they start early on, right, and they kind of don't really know yet what culture actually means or how to describe it and how to even then, even after describing, how to even put that into reality. How do you, and we've gone through this journey now several times with a number of companies, how does culture get formed and how do you describe it and how do you get people to actually live it on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question that I've reflected on a lot over the years. And overall, I've settled on the following. So I think it's very important that the values of a company are agreed by the founders, typically at the start of the journey, and then how companies live those values is, it's very hard to think about on a day-to-day basis. How do I raise the bar or whatever that might be? So typically, I think where there's moments of tension is where you need to think about the values. And by tension, I don't necessarily mean conflict, although that might be a source of tension. I mean sort of tension between two scenarios. So for example, you know, we have a product problem. Do we optimize at this point in time for the customer feedback or for the revenue generation? Like, you know, what is it here that what are we going to solve for? And when you're stuck at that sort of moment of tension, I think that's when you need to reflect on the values as guiding principles. I'm also going to add, though, that I think a lot of companies focus squarely on, you know, our culture, and our culture has changed, and, you know, this is so terrible. Of course, cultures change. Like, you know, in a hyper growth environment, for example, where literally everything changes quarter by quarter, you know, the people aren't the same, the order volumes aren't the same, the revenue isn't the same, everything is different. Why wouldn't culture also evolve at the same pace? Like, you know, that's normal. So people need to be adaptable to cultural evolutions. And there's nothing wrong with also saying, hey, you know, the culture used to work for me when we were a much smaller company. And now this new phase of our culture, it's not for me. And it's time for me to find something else. That's a totally normal reaction to the evolution of a business. And I think employees and people and businesses shouldn't shy away from that. And it's totally cool.
Yeah. And I'm sure, I mean, at Deliveroo, you went from being one of the early team members, right? From a size of roughly 50 to many thousand employees. And, you know, probably one of the fastest growing and now also biggest startups in the UK tech ecosystem. Would you say, you know, this change in culture as you grow, is that something that it's needed or wanted, or maybe a bit of a byproduct or a result of that you have less control or less influence on the evolution of culture as the company just gets bigger? How does the culture actually get affected? What specifically is it actually that drives this change?
It's really, I think one of the, you know, for sure, the leaders that you choose to bring in at any moment in a culture, in a business's life cycle will have a disproportional impact, right? It does come from the top, and that's why it's really important to be very mindful and conscious about, you know, what culture you want your leaders to be exhibiting, manifesting, living, etc. Now, that said, I fundamentally do not believe that there is a culture that changes so violently over time. Like, I find it to be a very normal evolution, and so it's not something that scares me. What does scare me is seeing, you know, very bad behaviors from leaders, from managers, from anyone, and not stamping those out immediately. Because I think that's when you can get a sort of toxic basically a toxic impact onto the organization. So for me, it's very clear. Like, you start seeing bad behaviors that you're not happy with, have that conversation, have that feedback. But definitely, you know, if it persists, then it may be time to take more drastic action, and that's okay. Ultimately, we are judged on the behaviors that we allow to persist. As leaders, as people, so you need to be aware of that.
And I think also we're kind of coming towards the end. I don't want to take too much of your time. I really appreciate you speaking to us today.
No problem.
I would say, I think one thing maybe that could be useful for some of the listeners that are interested in a career in people or people operations or HR, whatever you want to call it today. I guess it depends maybe on the company as well. Who would you recommend that this is a, you know, a desirable, interesting career path, and maybe what type of person, you know, fits this role very well?
Yeah. Look, I think you need to, someone who comes into a people role needs to have resilience. Like there is a lot of, there's a lot of emotional labor that happens. And typically you see, and you hear about things that are sad on the one hand, but also sometimes quite, you know, intellectually demanding, and balancing, you know, the right thing to do emotionally with like a, you know, a really intellectually difficult problem to solve, while of course, you know, having the normal stresses of like work and life is hard. So I think resilience is very important. Capability to think outside the box and, you know, not necessarily go down the, you know, somewhat boring HR trodden path, you know, is important. A curious mindset. So someone who asks a lot of the questions and is happy to hold leaders accountable and challenge and, you know, just make sure that we're, that they and the business is on the right path. Yeah, all these things are important. It's not for everyone, but for people who are interested in people, it's a unique journey.
And if there's somebody here that really is resonating with this and they're interested maybe in Ravio or, you know, contacting you or learning more, is there a way that people can reach out to you or somebody else in the company?
Yeah, of course, delighted to. Yeah, so feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Otherwise, my email is vaso@ravio.com. And again, you know, delighted to share any benchmark or any insight or anything at all that might be interesting to a fellow people professional.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.